Okay, we begin here with the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Yud Ched Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "A gozelet chaveiro, o shehivamenu, person stole from his friend or borrowed from him, o shehivkido biyishuv, or the person deposited something with him in the settled areas, lo yachzir lo b'midbar. He does not have a right to return the item to him outside of the areas that are settled or civilized on the road, somewhere in the Midbar, because that's an area which is not easily shamur. It's not a place where you can watch items, take care of items, and therefore it's unfair to return it to him in that location. So of course, if you stole it or you borrowed it, there for sure you don't have a right to give it back in a different location. But even if he deposited it with you, the return of the object has to be in a place where he can take care of it and he can deal with it. Almanat, let's say, b'midbar, yachzir lo b'midbar. If on condition that he's going to go out to the midbar, then he can give it back to him in the midbar. Obviously, this is a little bit pshita, which the Gemara asks, okay, what's the question here? If you can make a t'nai that that's going to be the condition of whatever transaction you're having here, then why shouldn't it be that way? Why should there be any objection to that? Piraminu, milveh mishtalemet b'chol makom, Aveidah pikadon ein mishtalmim ela b'mikoman. So now we have a braita that seems to indicate that a loan can be repaid anywhere, whereas an aveidah and a pikadon can only be given back in their location, meaning in a location that's secure in an original location of where the transaction took place. The difference being over here is that milveh is not where you're returning the actual object itself. Milveh, when you return a loan, you're just paying the money back. So there is a possibility, or even a probability, that you will bump into the person, and you will have the money on you, and you will give it to him. You don't have to make any special effort to bring the money to that location. On the other hand, when it comes to the pikadon or the aveidah, you would have to transport the item to that location in order to return it. So the assumption being here in the braita is that milveh, which can happen anywhere, or you have the monies anywhere you could return, whereas a pikadon and a aveidah, you'd have to specifically try to return it in that location, that we don't allow. So Abaye says, no, you have to understand the braita in this manner. Hachi kamar, milveh nitna litava b'chol makom. The creditor has a right to demand repayment of the loan in any location that he so chooses. Because, yado ala yona, as Rashi says, the creditor has the upper hand. What the Gemara quotes in other places is that eved lova le'ish malve, that the debtor is basically in servitude to the creditor, and therefore he has to go by the whims of the creditor. If the creditor demands payment back in this other location, he has to make payment in the other location. The other hand, aveidah pikadon, lo nitnu litava ala b'mkoman. The other hand, when it comes to an aveidah or a pikadon, you can only demand that they be given back in the location. You can't demand that the person transport them to somewhere else or bring them to you in the location that you choose. Rather, it has to be done in the location where they were given or lost, as opposed to a loan where the demand can be that it be returned in any location. But if that's the case, it's obviously not a stira anymore to our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says that the debtor doesn't have a right to return it in the midbar. But over here, the creditor has a right to demand repayment wherever he so chooses. Amanat, let's say the midbar. So that's the latter half of the Mishnah. Pshita, the Gemara says, what's the question here? Lotzricha, da'amale, la'avi hai pikadon gabeich, da'ana the midbar nafikna. Says, I'm depositing this item with you because I'm heading out. I'm going traveling in these areas that are not settled, inhabited, and therefore I'm going to leave it with you. Vamale ihu. The shomer says back to him, "Ana la midbar nami bi ina la meivak. I happen to have the same plans. I'm heading out of town as well." So then he bi ina la drina lecha, hata mehadrina lecha. If I have the option, then I reserve the option then to return it to you while there I'm in the midbar. So Rashi says over here, "The afagav de lo tnai gamurhu." Even though it's not a full-fledged tnai, because it was said by the shomer and not by the depositor. But the fact that the shomer said it and the depositor did not object to it, that grants him the right to return it out in the midbar. There are others who read it in the following manner, which is Vamale ihu ana the midbar nami beina the meifak. That's it. That's all the statement of the shomer is. I'm also going out to the midbar. then the narrative of the Gemara is, that if I want, that means, or that's the equivalent of saying, if I want to return it to you there, I will return it. Just your statement of the fact that I will also be in that location is enough to grant you the right to return it in that location. Because otherwise, the depositor should have said, don't bring it out there. Even if you're going to be out there, I don't want to receive it out there. I don't want it back out there. The fact that he doesn't object gives you the right to do it, even though it's not a condition in the deposit or an explicit condition in the transaction. Okay, next Mishnah. Homer lechavero, gizalticha hilvitani hivkadete itzli. He says, either I stole from you, I borrowed from you, or you deposited something with me. Ve'eni yodea im hechzarti lecha. I don't know if I returned it to you. Im lo hechzarti lecha. Or I didn't return it to you. Chayav l'shalim. In that case, he is obligated to pay, because we don't really know now whether there was a claim made against him, or simply this is all volunteered by him. About, im amar lo eini yodea, if he says, I don't know, im gizalticha, im hilvitani, im hefgarate etzli, he doesn't even know if the original transaction took place at all, patur mi l'shalim. Then he doesn't have to pay. So seemingly, what's going on in the Mishnah is that in the Reisha, there is clear obligation. He agrees that there's an obligation here because something transpired that would make him chayab to return it. On the other hand, he doesn't have sufficient information to tell whether he did or did not return the item or pay back whatever it is that he owed. In the latter half of the Mishnah, we're not even certain there was an obligation because he says, any yodea, if any of this happened. So that seemingly is the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. We'll see in the Gemara more detail around how the Mishnah is structured. Itmar, manali biyadecha, you have 100 zuz of mine. V'halo omer, eni yodea. The other guy says, I have no clue. Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda amre chayav. Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda say you are obligated to pay in that case when you say eni yodea, I don't know. Rav Nachman v'Rav Yochanan amre patur. Now then, Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan say you do not have to pay in that case. Now the explanation is, Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda amre chayav, they say you're obligated to pay, bori v'shema bori odif. You have a claimant making a definitive claim and saying you owe me the money. You have the defendant over here saying that, I don't know. So what they say is you have one person making a definitive claim, the other guy saying I don't know, then bori odif, the definitive claim trumps in this case, and you have to make payment. Rav Nachman Rav Yochanan amre patur. We're patur uki mamona b'chezkat mare. We leave everything as is. We leave the status quo intact. The money is now with, supposedly, the guy who is the defendant over here. We're not going to move the money based on unknowns or facts that don't necessarily indicate that he owes the money. Yes, the other guy's making a definitive claim, but we have no other evidence or outside evidence to the claim. And the other guy is saying, I don't know. I don't know means that maybe it never happened. And therefore we leave it. You have to bring a proof. Otherwise we're going to leave it with the defendant. Now, Rashi notes over here, it's a very important Rashi, that when they say you are patur over here, mihu yishava. You have to take a shvu'ah at that point to say that ain't yodeya, that I don't know. And Rashi's reasoning is because even if he was kofir bakol, even if he made a definitive defense and said that I owe nothing, he would have to take a shvuat heset. He would have to take a shvuat that was instituted by the chachamim, that in cases of kofar bakol, complete denial, that you have to take a shvuat. So Rashi says, why should this be worse than kofar bakol? In a complete denial, where you make a definitive claim, you have to take a shvuat. Here where you say any yodea, which in some senses incriminates you more in this case, then, is a quasi-admission there might be something going on, then you certainly should have to take a shvuat hesed. That's what Rashi says. Tosafot over here discusses Rashi's contention, and he says he thinks he's right, that what Rashi says is correct, and he brings Rav Haigoin and others that say that the same thing, that there is this necessity for a shvuat. The only thing that Tosafot works on is that in every situation, or is this only true when there's what's called drora de mamona? When there is already some sort of obligation or indication of the fact that there is an obligation here that generates the shvua. And that's what the Ri says, that the Rabbeinu Tam, Omer de Misafek, Ein Luchai Vo Shvua, Echadaleka Drorah de Mamona. Because there are two lishonot in the sheet of Rav Nachman with regards to Shvuot Heset, in the Gemara in Shvuot, over there the two lishonot, one lishon says that you always have to take a Shvuot Heset, the other one says that you only have to take a Shvuot Heset when there's some indication that he might be chayav, or there's something that indicates some guiltiness in the party here. So therefore, the Tosafot says, we paskin like the Lishna Kama over there, and therefore you can always ask for a Shvuot Heset, and the same would be true over here, you can ask for a Shvuot Heset. The Rebbeinu Tam says it's a Safek, we have to then be choshesh that you need a Drorah de Mamona, and therefore the Rebbeinu Tam says, without a Drorah de Mamona, I won't allow a Chiyuv Shvua. And then he says something interesting, the Shamari, we heard that Rebbeinu Tam, I mean, niach l'dayanim l'chayev, hecha d'leka Drorah de Mamona, rak shulo ayah rotze l'dunkei. He will let other judges do that, force a shvua, even when there's no drar de mamona, but he himself would not act on that. And so, Ari, Rabbeinu Tam lechayev shvua, fogab deleke edim, bayoda, yechol lichvor b'shah shatan shepirati. He also says that even in a case where there are no edim to corroborate the original statement of the claimant, in that situation as well, the Rabbeinu Tam would force a shvuat heseit, even though the person could deny, though, they could say, yeah, I received it in Parati, and he'd be out. Nevertheless, we still force a Shvuat Heset in that case. So here we have, again, an extension of the concept of a Shvuat Heset, that yes, we allow people to make claims, and maybe they're telling the truth, but we want to know for sure that they're not just using this as a mechanism to get out of their obligation. And therefore, we demand from them a Shvuat, that they're telling the truth, that they are, when they say any Yodea, it's really any Yodea, and not simply any Odeya, so that I don't have to pay in this situation. Alright, Tznan, the Gemara asks from our Mishnah, Aval, ima marlo, any Odeya, imi ovitani patur. Our Mishnah says, if I don't know if he lent the money, then he's patur. The Seifa of the Mishnah says that if the guy says, I don't know if there was a loan here, then you are patur. That seems to favor the position of Nachman and Rabbi Yochanan. Hey chidami, ilema daglo katovi lei. If you say it's a case where the claimant is not making any claim, so then it's a little strange because reishanami delo katavile, then that means that the reish of the Mishnah is also a case where the claimant isn't making a claim. Then amai chayav. Then why is he chayav? Meaning that the whole indebtedness here or incrimination here is coming from the fact that this individual is admitting to whatever happened. So why should there be a difference then between the reish and the seifa? In the seifa he says, of his own volition. I don't know if I stole from you. I don't know if I borrowed from you. I don't know if you deposited something with me. In the Reisha, he says, I know you deposited something with me. I'm not sure if I returned it. Why should there be any difference if all this is voluntarily coming from him? You end up in the same predicament, which is any Yodeya, and it's all deriving from the defendant. There is no claimant over here. So why should the din be different in the Reisha than it is in the Seifa? So that's what the Gemara says here. If you want to claim that the Seifa is a case where there is no claimant, and that's why it's not a question about Bari B'Shema, because there's no Bari claim over here, then you're going to have to say the same thing in the Reisha. If there's no Bari claim in the Reisha, Amai Chayav, then why does he have to pay in that case? Ela Katavile. So it must be a case where there is a claimant. Viktani Seifa Patur Milishalem. And then the Seifa says you don't have to pay. That's a case of Bari B'Shema. Bari v'shema, patur, that supports of Nachman and Rabbi Yochanan's position. Lo, the olam, delo katabele. It's a case where there is no claimant. V'resha, babad, let's say, yidei shamayim. And the resha is where he wants the yotze yidei shamayim. So, in the case of the resha, there is no claimant. In the case of the seifa, there is no claimant. Yet, the Mishnah says in the resha, chayav, and in the seifa, patur, which means that now, we're talking about, let's say, Yidei Shemayim, which is a Midat Chesidut. It is something that's Lifni Mishurat Adin. It's something that is not by the letter of the law. We can't demand payment of you, but you want to just be sure that you don't owe the money. So in the case of the Reisha, there we say that there is a reason to be, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. Because the person says, I have some sort of obligation here. I'm not sure I discharged the obligation. So there's a reason to say, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. In the latter part of the Mishnah, we're not even sure if there is an obligation at all, if that had happened at all. Over there, we're not going to say that there's a reason to be, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. But once you've done that, now you take away our Mishnah being a proof to either side, because it's no longer a case of Bari and Shema. there is no claimant in the Mishnah. If there's no claimant, then it's not the case that we're discussing over here. Itmar Nami, I'm Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. We have a similar statement from Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that let's say Yidei Shemayim is something that we speak about here. Omer Lechavero, Mana Libi Adecha. Person says, you owe me 100 zuz. V'halo Omer, Eni Yodea, I don't know. Chayav Bebad, let's say Yidei Shemayim. That when he comes to me, let's say Yidei Shemayim, then he is chayav, he is obligated to do that. Now remember, Rabbi Yochanan is of the view that Bari and Shema is patur. And here Rabbi Yochanan is authoring a position that says you are chayav. So Rabbi Yochanan, in a case of Bari and Shema, agrees that even though you are patur, there still is a value in being, let's say, Yidei Shemayim, in order to be Yotzei Yidei Shemayim. So you see, conceptually, there is such an idea. In a situation where you're not chayav, there still is a reason to be, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. And therefore, even the one who says that generally you're patumi dine adam, molded the chayav when there is a tzat tainat bari. When there's something like a tainat bari, or there's some sort of admission that there might have been a transaction that was here originally, those are reasons, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. So we see conceptually there is such an idea, and therefore you could explain the Mishnah in this manner, and it would not be far-fetched. Because even Rabbi Yochanan of Nachman, who the Mishnah is a proof to, they still believe that when we say you're patur, there's still this reason to be, let's say, Yidei Shemayim. So certainly, Rav Huna and Rabbi Yehuda can explain the Mishnah as being a case where there is no Bari. It's only a case of Shema. Yet there's still a reason to believe that you would be, let's say, Yidei Shemayim, there would be Chayav, and that's what the Reisha would be speaking about. All right, the next Mishnah. Hagonev Tzle Mina Eder. Person steals an animal from amongst the flock, vechziro, and then he returns it. Umeit, o nignav. After he's returned it, it dies, or it's stolen. Chayav ba'achariuto. He is responsible for the animal. Because of the fact that he stole it, once he had stolen it, he becomes responsible for the animal. And just because he returned it doesn't discharge his obligations or his responsibility vis-a-vis that animal. We're going to see four opinions in the Gemara as to how exactly that works or what the issue is in the Mishnah. Lo yadu balim, lo b'gnevato, v'lo b'chazirato. If the balim have no clue, not about the fact that it was stolen, not about the fact that it was returned, umanu et atzon, and then they took a census of the animals there, ushleimahi, patur, and then they see that all the animals are there, the ganav is patur. So now you have a Mishnah that says two things. One is if you steal and return it, you're still responsible. The other one who says that if it's stolen and returned, but the Balim count the animals, count the flock, then you're discharged of any obligation. So how do we read this? So now you have the four Amoraim are going to give their opinions. Amarav, ledat tzarich dat. Shalola dat minyan puter. So what Ram says is that if the Balim know about the theft, meaning they recognize the fact that there's been a theft here or that there's an animal that is missing over here, then Sarich Dat, the only way it's considered to be Hashava, a return, is if they know about the return. Meaning the fact that they know about the theft, the only way to have Hashava now is for them to know about the return. You can't just flip it. Right. You can't just drop it back by them. Shalola Dat, if they are unaware of the theft, then returning it by itself is not sufficient. But if they count the flock and they see that everything is there, that already makes it as if it is returned. So here, according to Rav, the knowledge of the Balim ups the threshold of what a hashava, or what a return, is considered to be hashavata gzela. On the other hand, if the Balim are unaware of it, then we have a lower threshold, which is that they just need to be aware that all their animals are there, and that already takes care of it. V'chitani umanu et atzon v'hishlema aseifa. And that's what's going in the Mishnah when it says that they counted the tzon and they found everything was there. That goes on the latter half of the Mishnah, which is the Mishnah begins that agoneg tle mina eder v'chziro meit onignav chayav b'achriyoto. So what Rav is saying is the first half of our Mishnah is ledat. When the Balim know about the theft, then simply putting it back in the flock will not suffice. Then there's a second half of the Mishnah, lo yadu Balim. They were not aware of the theft, not aware of the return, but then they counted the animals. That counting is what grants them the tour, grants the tour to the ganav in that case. And that's the way Rav will explain our Mishnah. Shmuel Amar, ben ledat, ben shalol ledat, minyan puter. It doesn't matter whether the Balim are aware of the theft or not aware of the theft. As soon as they count the flock and they see that all the animals are there, we're done. The Ganav is done at that point because the Balim now know that all their animals are there. V'chitani umanu v'hishleima patur akula. And what Shmuel says is that the qualification at the end of the Mishnah, which is if they count the flock and everyone is there, your patur, it goes not only on the last statement in the Mishnah of lo yadu balim, but even in the first part of the Mishnah, which is even when the balim know about it. So whether it's ladat or ben shalo ladat, then when you count up, you are patur. Now, Rabbi Yochanan, here's our third opinion, says, ladat minyan poter. If it was with the knowledge of the balim that there's now a missing animal from the flock, and then he counts it up afterwards, then you're patur. Shalo ladat, afilu minyan lami lo tzarich. That when it comes to shalolodat, the balim were never aware of the theft, you don't even have minyan. Just returning it would be sufficient in that case. That last statement in the Mishnah is qualifying the Reisha of the Mishnah, not the last statement of the Reisha. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, basically, if it is ladat, if the balim know about the theft, so either they need to be know about the return, or they have to come to that knowledge by the counting of the flock. Manu fills in for their knowledge. Shalolodat, the balim don't know about it, just put it back. They never knew it was gone, and you put it back, then it's not gone, because they never knew about the theft, and it's been returned now. There's no requirement to inform them of that fact. Rav Chisda amar, ladat, minyan puter. Shalolodat, tzarich dat. So Rav Chisda has the most unusual of the four positions over here. So far, Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan's positions, first of all seemingly logical, and they read pretty easily into the Mishnah. Rav Chisda's Shita is a little bit of a Chiddush, and beyond being a little bit of a Chiddush, it's much harder to read into the Mishnah, and for that reason, the Gemara will ask, my time, what's the reasoning behind Rav Chisda? And that is, Rav Chisda amar ladat, if the Balim know about the theft, then minyan poter. Then either they need to know about it being returned, or if they don't know about it, as long as they count up, and now they know that everything is there, they are now aware of the fact that the Gneva has been returned. So the minyan gives them that awareness, that is the same awareness that they had in terms of the theft. Shalolodat, on the other hand, if the balim were never aware of a theft, you have to inform them of the theft when you return it. So again, it's somewhat counterintuitive over here, which is that if the balim are knowledgeable about the fact that there was, or informed about the fact that there was a theft, then returning it does not need their knowledge, just needs their awareness. And that awareness can be generated through minyan, through the counting of the animals. On the other hand, if they are completely unaware of the theft, you have to make them aware of the return. And then he's going to learn, similar to what Rabbi Yochanan said, is that the minyan helps by the dot, goes on the resha of the Mishnah. Now, Amar Rava, my taima, the Rav Chisda. What's the reasoning behind Rav Chisda? And again, as I just noted, the reason the Gemara is after what the reason is in Rav Chisda's position is because it's a little strange. Hoil v'antkata nagre brayata. The problem is here that the animal has now gotten used to leaving. It has left the flock. It's tasted freedom, we'll call it. And therefore, it might do things now that it wouldn't have done before. This animal might be more readily willing to leave the flock. It might run away again. It might do things that the Baalim would not expect. And therefore, what Rav Chisda's demand is that in a case where the Baalim are unaware of the fact that the animal left, and then it's returned to their flock, they don't know that they might have to put extra eyes on this animal, or watch this animal more carefully now, and the animal could end up getting injured or into a difficult predicament, because the Baalim don't know that it now has this sense that it can leave, or it will do things that it didn't do before. So that's the necessity to inform the Balim here, is to make them aware of the fact that something's changed in their flock and they have to treat it differently at this point. So that's the reasoning behind Rav Chisda. What's important to know about that is that that reasoning only applies to Balei Chaim, only to animals. That means if it's an inanimate object, that Rav Chisda's din would not apply. And the question would then be, is the halacha like Rav Chisda in inanimate objects? Because what Rava says, or the explanation for Rav Chisda, won't apply. So there you have a machlok. The Rif seems to indicate that Rav Chisda's din only applies in a case where we're dealing with Balei Chaim. If it's not that way, then the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. So that would be Rava, who's a Batra, similarly passes on Rav Chisda. How much weight does that put on Rav Chisda? The Rif says it's only about the situation in which Rava claims Rav Chisda's din is applicable. That's Vei Bal Chai. Whereas by the case of inanimate objects, the law could be like Rabbi Yochanan, who trumps in cases like this. You have Rabbi Yochanan, Rav, and Shmuel, the law is Rabbi Yochanan. Other Rishonim suggest that when we say Allah is Rav Chisda, that means the Gamre, like Rav Chisda. When Rava says he's explaining Rav Chisda, it's because he believes Allah is like Rav Chisda, and that means across the board, even when his reasoning doesn't apply. So now, in terms of the concept of the word Ladat, that it's to the knowledge or the Balim are informed of the theft, the question of how informed they have to be is not clear from the Gemara. Does informed mean that they know definitively there was a theft? Or does Ladat mean that they have a sense that something's going on, there's something missing from their flock? Whatever you think the threshold is for Dat Balim, their knowledge of it missing, which is that, do they know that there's a particular animal missing, or do they know simply that something is missing, or there's something wrong with the flock, will then also have the same repercussions with regards to the return. When you need Dat Balim of the return, do you need them to know that that specific animal was returned, or they need more general knowledge of the fact that now their Eder is back to normal, and it's there again? Now the Gemara says, Umi Amar Rava Achi. The Rava really say this, Vamar Rava, Hayman de Chazia de Chavrei, the Agva Imram Edra Didei. A guy sees, and this is to your question about exactly what is the awareness here, a guy sees his buddy or someone coming in lifting an animal out of his flock. He's standing and watching, and he sees the guy going to steal it. Brahma Bekala. He starts screaming at him, so the guy realizes, you know, he's under surveillance, somebody sees him. Vishadya, and he leaves it. Velo yada, ihadre, ilohadre. He has no idea whether the guy dropped it, meaning returned it to him, or dropped it and ran off. Meaning that the Balim here know that someone was trying to steal from them. They screamed at the guy, but they have no idea what happened now. He doesn't even know what the guy did. He just sees the guy running. He doesn't know if he's running with the sheep or he's without a sheep. Meaning he just have no awareness of what happened after that point. Omeito nignav, and then it died or it was stolen. Chayav achriuto. This guy who came to steal was responsible for it. Mailav, avagav demani. Even though then he went and counted his flock. Lo, delomani. It's a case where it wasn't counted. So what happened here is that the individual comes to steal and the Balim stop or seemingly stop the theft. They're just not sure how well they stopped him. Did they stop him completely, and therefore their flock is intact? Or did they scare him away so only took off with one animal and not a whole bunch of animals? So they're unaware of what really transpired. Therefore, now the return of the animal has to be done in a way that gets the Balim the same information they had before. Right now, we have what's called Dat Balim. The Balim are aware of the possibility of a theft over here. That means that in order for it to be returned, there's only one of two ways. According to Rav Chisda, either you have to inform the Balim, or the Balim have to enumerate the herd and realize that everything is there. Because then they were aware of the fact there was a possible theft over here, and when they count it, that counteracts it. But we don't have any evidence of a count over here to say that he should be patur. So now the Gemara says, it's seemingly that the guy counted it, and even though he counted it, you're still chayav. So that would go against, obviously, Rav Chisda's explanation of the Mishnah, it would also go against Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of the Mishnah, which is that when you have Dat Balim, a count is sufficient grounds to exempt you from responsibility. Gemara answers in the end, no, it's not a case where he counted after the fact. It was it. That was it. The end of the story is that the guy, we're not sure if he stole it, and then he never counts his flock. So in that situation, it's not considered to be returned when it's there in the flock, or he returns it to the flock, because the Balim don't have, quote-unquote, dot that it was returned. Whether that's actual knowledge of being returned or the counting of the flock, neither of those have been done, and so there's nothing here that exempts the Ganav from his responsibility. Now the Gemara says, Umi Amar Rav Hachi. Rav's position that we saw in the Mishnah is that dat trich dat, that the Balim know about it, they need dat. Shalola dat, without knowledge, then minyan suffices. So now Gemara says, did Rav really say this? Vama Rav, echziro le'eder should be midbar yatsa. If the flock or the herd is out in the midbar, in the uninhabited areas, then when he returns it to the flock, he's done. So why is that okay? Why is it dropping it back off just fine? Rav requires either dat balim or minyan, one of those two, to exempt you. He doesn't say that you can just drop it off and everything's fine. So I'm Rav Chanan Barava, mode Rav birikuuta. So this is what you were asking about before. Here, Rav admits to the fact when it's a rikuuta. Rashi says over here, rikuuta, is that it is a discernible or easily identified animal. So the way that many explain the word rikuuta, which is the translation of the Targum by Yaakov Avinu, when it talks about the spotted animals, that's a rikuuta. So it's an unusual animal, or it has some unique features to it, and therefore the Balim always notice that animal because right away it's discernible or easily identified. So when it's missing, they know about it. When it's returned, they know about it. So here's a way to generate dat balim without actually having dat balim. You don't have to face the balim and tell them that you stole it and you gave it back. Right. But the fact that this is such a unique animal, they'll know right away. When it's in the Eder, they'll see it. And that's the equivalent of dat balim, that it was returned. Lema kitanaye. Let us say that this issue is a machloket tanaim about dat balim. Hagonev tle min Eder. Vesela min akis. Person steals an animal from the flock. Money from the money pouch. Lemakom sheganav yachzir divi Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says, wherever you took it from, you drop it back off, you give it back. Kivomer tzarich dat balim. And then Rabbi Kiva says, you need the balim to be aware. Savrua. Now Gemara says, we make an assumption. Once the Gemara does that, you know the way that we can undermine the position the Gemara is taking now is to say the assumption is wrong. The Gemara says, Savrua, the kuliyama itlu the Rabbi Yitzchak. Everybody agrees or subscribes to this position of Rabbi Yitzchak. Dam Rabbi Yitzchak. Adam asui the mashmesh bikiso b'chol sha'a. A person checks their money pouch at all times. This is something we're going to see in the Gemara in Bava Metzia as well, which is that how aware are people of something being lost? How do they know if they dropped money or money fell out of their pouch, how soon are they going to be aware of that fact? So Rabbi Yitzchak over there says that people are aware very quickly about the missing money because they're always counting the money in their pouch. They're always checking on how much they have. That makes it that the person is very aware of missing money or money being replaced. So my love, besela ladat, and therefore in this case, where you have a sela ladat, he lost the money and he knows about the fact that, the money was stolen and he's aware of it very quickly. Because how is he aware of it so quickly? It's because he's always checking on his pouch, he's always counting his change. So if he counts it or he checks on it all the time, he's readily aware of the fact that it was stolen. That means almost immediately he's aware of that fact. Uplokta de Rav Shmuel. And then Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel are arguing in Rav and Shmuel, which is when you have dat balim by Gneva, do you acquire dat balim on the return? Or is it simply enough that they count the item and it's there? So therefore, in that situation, they stole the item and the guy is very aware of it very quickly, because of the fact that he's counting his change. Then you go and put the money back in the pouch. He's also aware of it very quickly because he's counting the money and he sees it's back in the pouch. So for Shmuel, that would be fine because it was taken the dot and Minoy counting it is sufficient grounds to be considered return according to him. So therefore, according to Shmuel, that's fine. And that's what Rabbi Shmuel says. The return is good enough. Rabbi Akiva is like Rav. Rav says that when you have dat balim about the gneiva, you need dat balim on the return. Minyan does not suffice in that case. Since minyan does not suffice in that case, you need real dat balim, and that's what Rabbi Akiva says over here. You need real dat balim. Betleh shalol dat. And the situation with the stealing of the animal from the flock is a case when it is shalol dat. And in that situation, they're actually arguing in plukta de Rav Chista Rabbi Yochanan, the machloket of Rav Chista and Rabbi Yochanan, because in that case where it's shalol dat, is minyan is a return shalol dat sufficient? Rabbi Yochanan says, when it was taken shalol dat, then you can put it back without anything. No minyan, nothing. You just stick it back and everything is fine. Rav Chista says when it's taken shalol dat, then you need tzarich dat. You need actual dat on the return. And therefore, again, Rabbi Shmuel would be like Rabbi Yochanan. Shalol dat, just return it. According to Rabbi Akiva, says you need dat balim, that'd be like Rav Chista. When it's shalot dat, you have to return it ladat. Now, the reason Tosafot says over here that the Gemara said that the sela is ladat and the animal tle shalot dat is because that's the natural way that it would be. Most people will notice that the money is missing from their pouch or their wallet because they're checking all the time. It's not that they notice they stole it, but they notice that the money is missing and they notice that the money is returned. That's the machlok between Rav and Shmuel because that's ladat. On the other hand, when it comes to a tleh, an animal missing from the flock, that is not something that people are aware of all the time. That's more likely to be shelo ladat. So the Gemara sets it up that the case in this machlok between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva follows what would probably be the natural state, which is money you're aware of, animals you're not aware of. Then, if it's money that you are aware of, you have now the machlok and Rabbi Shmuel by dat, is minyan enough to rectify the situation? Rabbi Shmuel, like Shmuel, says yes. Rabbi Akiva, like Rav, says no. In the case Shalola died, it was taken without your knowledge. That's the case of an animal missing from the flock because you stole it from the flock. Over there, you have Machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Chista. Rabbi Yochanan says, if it's Shalola died Balim, drop it right back off and you're fine. Shalola died, everything is fine. So that's Rabbi Shmuel's position. Rabbi Akiva says you need that Balim just like Rav Chista. When it goes out, Shalola died, you need to return it, Ladat, so the Balim are aware of the fact that this animal had left or there's something going on with this animal. That's the Gemara's first attempt to explain that this is possibly a machloket tanaim. It's Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Durabba. So now, obviously the way to reject that is to say that you don't hold the Rabbi Yitzchak or that the machloket is about Rabbi Yitzchak's position. Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Durabba. B'shomer sheganav mishut balim. If a shomer steals from the balim themselves, from their possession, everybody agrees, like Rav Chista, that you have to inform the Balim of the return. It's not enough that it was taken out shelo ladat, and that's it. You can return it. No, you have to return it ladat. V'hacha, the machloket over here is b'shomer sheganav mirshuto. It's a case where a shomer stole from his own possession, meaning he was taking care of the animals, and then he makes off with one of them. He steals one of the animals that are in his possession. And they're arguing about this, the question of whether when you return it to that location, is that sufficient? So what the Gemara now is saying, and again, this favors that the halacha is like Rav Chista, is that everybody holds the Rav Chista. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva both agree with Rav Chista. When it's done shelo ladat, you need dat on the return. So if you steal from the owner himself, there it's clear that even if the owner was not aware of the theft, you have to make him aware of the return. The question here is where the shomer himself is the ganav. So he's aware of the theft. He's also aware of the return. But is that enough? Because he is only a proxy for the ba'alim. Now he represents the ba'alim because the ba'alim trust him to take care of this animal. The problem is that he breached that trust because he stole the item that he's supposed to be watching. Once he's done that, does that terminate his responsibilities as a shomer? And therefore now, when it's returned to him, it's not considered to be returned because he is not now a representative of the Balim. Or do we say that once the Shomer returns it, he goes back to his old self, being a Shomer? And that's what the Gemara says here. Rabbi Kiva Savar Kalto Lo Shmirato. Rabbi Kiva believes that this Shomer has ended or terminated his job as a guard or as a Shomer because he's no longer trustworthy. He stole. That automatically terminates his service as a shomer, and therefore the return of the item to him does nothing. You need to return it to the balim because they're the true owners, and that's the only way to do hashava. When Shmuel Sabar lo kalto lo shmirato, Rabbi Shmuel says that no, the shmira is still intact because when he returns it, the balim's unawareness of what happened here makes it that he's still a responsible party and a shomer, and therefore if you return it, that's considered to be a return. So therefore, that's the way that the Gemara explains their machloket and says, don't say that it's a machloket between Rav and Shmuel or Rav Chista and Rav Yochanan. That is also the same machloket that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel are arguing in. But rather, it's everybody agrees that Rav Chista is right. This is an unusual case of a shomer that stole. In that situation, we have an additional factor that's added in, which is that he's a shomer that might have terminated his shmira. And if he terminated his shmira, then there's no hashavat Gzeilah, when he just puts it back or takes it back into his possession. So Gemara says, Lema minyan puter tanayehi. Let us say that whether a minyan is successful at considered as if returned, that is a machloket tanaim. Detanya. Hagozelet chaveiro v'yevliya lo b'cheshbon. Person steals from his friend, and then he has some other transaction with him. In that new transaction, he adds the money back in and overpays him on the way back. So for instance, he stole the money and then he buys something from him. In purchasing it and giving him the money back, he gives him more than he should have. And part of that is the enough to cover the gzela. Tani chada yatsa. One breita says, yatsa, he's done. Vishivit gzela asher gazal. Tani idach lo yatsa. We have another breita that says, not. So that seems like a machloket tanaim as to whether minyan works. Savrua, tukule yama yitlu de Rabbi Yitzchak. Once again, we assume that everybody subscribes to Rabbi Yitzchak. Damar adam asud mashmesh b'kiso b'chol sha v'sha. That a person is always checking on his money, counting his money. That means when you give him the excess money back, he'll be aware of that excess very quickly. Myla ba'akamifligate. Demanda mar yatsa. The one who says that it works. Savar minyan poter. He believes that minyan is sufficient to be considered a return of the item. And since now you've returned it through minyan. Again, here we don't know if it was done ledat or shalol ledat. But whichever way, based on which amora that you subscribe to, you can make it work over here, that the return and the counting of the item is sufficient to be considered a shivat gzela asher gazal. Mandamar lo yatsa, and the braita that says you're not yotzei savar minyan onu puter. He disagrees with our Mishnah, disagrees with the other braita, and says that just because he enumerated it, that's not called dat balim. That's not considered to be a return of the item. So amre, isvir alan karabi yitzchak, kuli amalo plige de minyan puter. Let us say no. If you hold a Rabbi Yitzchak, everybody believes that minyan puter. Elabit Rabbi Yitzchak kamiflege. That's exactly what these brightot are arguing about, is how aware are the balim of the fact that you returned the item. That's the question. Do you hold a Rabbi Yitzchak or not? Mar idle the Rabbi Yitzchak. The brightot that says you are patur holds a Rabbi Yitzchak's position, which is that a person will be readily aware of the fact that the money's returned because he's counting at all times. Umar lele the Rabbi Yitzchak. The other brayta that says you are chayav, meaning that you didn't discharge your obligation of returning it, is because they don't hold the Rabbi Yitzchak. Therefore, the balim are not aware of the fact that it was returned, and that where the minyan can't help you in that case. Vibaytema. And some suggest this is the machloket in the brayta. Kuli amayitlu the Rabbi Yitzchak. Everybody subscribes to Yitzchak. Lo kasha had the money v'ramale b'kise. Here's a case where he counted it and then put it into his wallet. And here's a case where he counted it out and put it in his to his hand. So here the gazlan is counting out the money and says, here's the money that I owe you. In one case, he puts it into his wallet. And in one case, he puts it into his hand. So in the case that he puts it into his wallet, so that in that case, he's going to count because he never got it in his hand. And since he never got it into his hand, then he's going to check his wallet, and he keeps checking. He realizes that there's more money in his pouch than he had expected, and he'll be aware of it. On the other hand, when you put it directly into his hand, there he might just take it from his hand and dump it into his wallet, and he won't have counted it. He won't focus on it. He doesn't know how much. The guy said, I gave you the money that I owed you for the transaction. But he doesn't know that fact that there's more than he was supposed to get for the transaction. He's not going to count it because it never, quote-unquote, ends up in his keys. It ends up in some sort of bank account or puts it away, and he never really counts the money. Vivaitema, idi vidi, the money, varamba bikise. It's a case where the gazlan counts it out and puts it into the pouch. Hadi le zuzi achrine bikise, hadalele zuzi achrine bikise. Depends if he has other money in the pouch or not. According to Rashi, that means if the pouch is empty, and then he puts the money in there, then when he counts it, he'll realize there's too much in there, and he'll be aware of the fact that you returned the money. The other hand, if there's already money in the pouch, and then you dump the money into the pouch, when he counts it, he doesn't know if the money was because the money that was there before, or because you added in some excess. That's the way Rashi explains it. The Rif explains it just the opposite. The Rif says, if it's empty, then he's not going to be aware of the fact, because he's not going to count the money. What's in the pouch, he assumes, is exactly what he just got back. On the other hand, if he already has money in there, and now you put the new money in there, he's going to count again just to see how much he has in total. Something that will drive him to count again. And therefore, in that case, he will be aware of the excess because he knows how much was there before, and now he knows how much has been added to it. So that's the way that the Rif learns it, just the opposite of the way that Rashi explains it over here. All right, now, next Mishnah. Ein lochim min haroim tzemer v'chalav ugdiim. When it comes to shepherds, you may not purchase from them wool, milk, or an animal. V'lo mishomrei perot itzimu perot. And people who guard orchards, you can't buy wood and fruits from them. The underlying assumption here is, both by a ro'eh and by a shomer perot, is that their job is to watch these items, to protect these items, but they have no rights to these items. And if they're now selling these items, it's in all likelihood because they stole from the Baalim. And so we don't want you to buy from someone who is stealing. And not only do we not want you to buy from someone, we don't want to be machzik yidei ovrei avera. These people who are stealing, we don't want to help them out and facilitate their stealing. Aval, lokhim min nashim, you are allowed to buy from women. Kleid semer be Yehuda, ukleid pishtan be Galil. You're allowed to buy woolen garments from women in Yehuda, and linen garments from the women in the Galil. That is because, not that there's anything particular here, except for the fact that women in the Galil worked with linen, and women in the Yehuda worked with wool. And that was what they did as a side job or to help raise money for the family. And so you're allowed to purchase from them because the underlying assumption is that their husband knows about this. And this is additional income from the family. This is not something unusual that you would say that they're stealing from their husband and then selling it to you. But rather, this is normal thing that women do in these households. And therefore, you can buy it from them. V'agalim b'sharon. And in the Sharon, you can buy calves. So it sounds like the women would raise calves in the area of the Sharon, or Rashi says in a specific place called the Sharon, that they would raise calves, and therefore if they sell you a calf, we don't assume that they're stealing it from their husband, we assume that that's part of the additional income of the household. Rashi brings another interpretation of Sharon, which means something that is in the open, that is ein kol. So these are people who watch or graze calves. Ro'im, these are shepherds of calves in the open. So in that situation, you can buy from them because they're not going to steal in public. It's such an obvious thing that they are guiding the animals. If they're selling it to someone, everybody's going to see that. So this is something where if they are really stealing, someone will be aware of it, and therefore they won't do it. So that's the other possible explanation, though Rashi favors that it is similar to the two previous cases, which is a woman providing this item. Then, v'chulan she'amru la'atzmin, any one of these women that says, don't let anybody see that I sold it to you, asur. There it's clearly asur, because anybody who tells you, don't show anybody what you bought from me or hide what it is, it's clearly involved with merchandise that is hot or merchandise that they shouldn't have. V'luchim beitzim v'tana golim mikol makom. You're allowed to buy eggs and chickens from anyone and anywhere. There we don't assume that they are stolen. Tana banan. You can't buy from the shepherds, not goats, not kids, not shearings, or wool that is just pulled off the animal. But you are allowed to buy from them things that are woven or stitched, because they are definitely theirs. So now, what's interesting is that, what's the difference between tfurim and the other items? So either you say that there's a shinoi in the item, even if it was stolen, the ro'eh has already acquired it, and when he's selling you his item. That might be one explanation, although that's not so appealing, because then that's the way Rashi explains it, but it's not so appealing, because then you still are helping them get rid of stolen merchandise, even though, yes, it's now theirs. The other possibility, which I would thought the Gemara says this in other places, is that when someone steals something, they invest the least amount of effort or money into the item in order to sell it or get rid of it. That is because if they get caught, and then they're going to have to return the item, or they're going to lose or have the item confiscated from them, they don't want their money invested in this item. So if the person's already making the effort to be tofer, to weave it, to stitch it, that means that they really must be theirs, because otherwise they wouldn't invest so much effort into it. Why would you invest so much effort into the item and then have it confiscated or taken away when it's found out that it was stolen? It's very risky. I'm saying, yeah, you'll believe them, but the authorities, when they come, they're going to confiscate the item. He's going to lose out, not just the item that he stole, but all the investment and time that he put in to do this. It's not worth it to him. So therefore, you can take these two. I would suggest maybe that's the reasoning here, that you can buy tefurim from them, is because they invested so much into the item. That's an indication of it not being a stolen item. Now, v'lochim en chalav u'gvina b'midbar. You're allowed to buy from them milk and cheese out in the midbar, v'lo b'yishuv, but not in the inhabited areas. Again, midbar here doesn't mean the desert. Midbar means areas that are uninhabited. Yishuv means areas that are inhabited. So the reason behind this is that the milk and the cheese usually go to the Baalim. that the shepherds have to give it to them. So if they're in the yeshuv, in the dwell, in the inhabited area, we would expect them to give it to the baalim because it's local, it's easy to get it to them. When they're out in the midbar, when they're out in these uninhabited areas, the baalim probably don't expect to get it because it's too far out. They're not going to bring it all the way in from those areas to the baalim. So either the baalim have given it to the shepherd and allowed him to take it, or they have an arrangement with the shepherd that he'll sell it and give them the money. But either way, it would be okay for you to buy it from them out there because of that reason. Lochimen dalet behei tzon, dalet behei gizin. You're allowed to buy from them four or five animals, or four or five, we'll call it shearings, meaning animals that were sheared. Aval lo shtei tzon, velo shtei gizin. And you may not buy from them two animals or two shearings. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, baitot lochimen, midbariot in lochimen. You can take from them or you can buy from them those what are seemingly domesticated animals. Whereas if they are midbariot, these are animals that are in the wild, then you may not take them. Seemingly, again here, not that these animals are necessarily domesticated or wild, it's a question of where they're grazing. Are they grazing in areas of domestication, or are they grazing out in the areas that are open or not governed? Rashi suggests that Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning is that how aware of the baalim, of the fact that you sold it or stole something from them. If they are grazing in the local area, in the inhabited areas, then the baalim will be aware if something's missing from their flock. So the roeh is not going to sell it when the baalim can be aware of it. On the other hand, if it's out in the midbar, where the baalim don't see their animals for a long time, they may not be aware of the missing animal, and therefore you can't buy from the roeh because it could be that he's stealing it. Klalo shel davar. Here is the general principle. Kol sharoeh mocher ubala bayit margish bo lochim mehen. Anything that the roeh sells and the owners would notice or be aware of it, that you can buy from them. Ein margish bo, if the baalim are not going to know about it, are not going to be aware of it, ein lochim mehen, you cannot buy it from them. So now the braita here suggests that you're allowed to buy a large number of animals, not a small number of animals. The reason being, exactly for what the conclusion of the Mishnah is, if you sell a bunch of animals, it's easily discernible that they're missing from the flock. Therefore, if the roeh sells it, he must have permission, because otherwise the baalim are going to know right away. If he sells off one or two animals, that he can claim was a trefa. An animal attacked the flock and he ate one of the animals. He can make all sorts of claims of why one is missing, and then he could be stealing it and selling it off. So you can't facilitate his doing that, so you can't buy small numbers from him, you can buy large numbers from him, and the same thing with the shearings. One shearing missing, not noticeable. Five shearings missing, that's a notable small amount of wool that would be missing from that which would be expected. So I'm Amakar, Lochimen Dalve Eitzon, Dalve Gizin. Hashta Yesh Lomar Arba'az Vininan, Chamishami Boy. If you can tell me you can buy four, then why do you need to tell me you can buy five? Once you can buy four, you obviously can buy five. Tosva, not here, but in other places in Shas, number of times makes a note of this, that the Gemara is inconsistent with this. Sometimes the Gemara will just say it's Derech Melitza. Meaning that the Gemara will just be, okay, that's the way people talk. Four or five, you know, you just give a general
bunch.
But it doesn't mean that means four or five, and now we worry about if you have four, why do you need five? Other times the Gemara is very makbid and asks, oh, well, if it's four, then why do you need five? But again, he says that the Gemara is not consistent. Tosfot in some places tries to give a reason why in this place they did and why this they didn't. But here the Gemara does ask the question and says, why did they say that? So the Gemara gives one answer. Amar Rav Chista, arba'a mitoch chamisha. When it says four or five, it doesn't mean four or five. It means four of five. So if you sell four out of five, that's a very obvious deficit in the flock. And the baalim are going to know. So unless he had permission, there's no way he would be selling them. Four from a small flock, five from a big flock. Meaning that four is enough from a smaller flock to be noticeable. Five you need to be from a larger flock. Hagufa kasho. The Gemara says is an internal stira in his braita. Amar dalvei tzon, dalvei gizin. You said you have permission for four or five to sell. Dalvei in aval shalosh lo. Four or five, yes. Three, no. Ema seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half of the bright that says, aval lo shtei tzon? Not two. Not two means aval hashalosh zvenina, that you're allowed to sell those three. Lokasha, habibraita, habibriata, habikichihashata. Depends on the health of the animals. If the animals are very healthy, then the Baalim take more notice of the animals because these are strong, good animals. And therefore, if three are missing in that case, he'll notice it, even three. Now, you don't need four or five, even three will be noticeable. The other hand, if these are weak animals, and the Baalim kind of don't pay so much attention to them because they're not the best of his flock, they're not the things, so then you need four or five for him to notice before they're missing. Three is not sufficient. All right. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Baitot lokhim mehem, Mibariot ein lokhim mehem. Ibaylo, Rabbi Yehuda, Reisha kai, Ulochumra. Is Rabbi Yehuda going on the Reisha, and therefore he's saying it's the Chumra, meaning that even when you sell four or five, you can only sell four or five in the Yishuv and not out in the Midbar, because the four and five in the Yishuv will be noticed by the Baalim. Four or five even out in the Midbar will not be noticed because they're not around. Oh, Dilma Seifa kai Ulochula. Or maybe he's going to save the safe that says you're not allowed to sell two. Does that mean you're only not allowed to sell two in the Midbar? But in the Yishuv, even two you could sell because the Baalim would notice. So now the Gemara says, Aresha kayu l'chumra. How do you explain the Resha? He's going on in the Chumra. Damar lochimen arba b'chamisha. When the Braita says you're allowed to buy four or five, so arba chamisha tzon, four or five animals, hani mili baitot. That's only true when they are close to the Yishuv. About midbariot, if they're out grazing in these uninhabited areas, afilu arba chamisha lo, even four or five you can't. Odelma seifa koi ulukula da'amar aval lo shtei tzon, when it says you're not allowed to sell two, lo shtei gizin, or not two shearings, hani mili midbariot. That's only when they're out of the yeshuv, far away. Aval baitot, if they're close by to where the Baalim live, shtayim nami lochim, you can even buy two because it'll be noticeable. Tashma, detanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lochim baitot mehen, vein lochim mehen midbariot. You're allowed to buy, again, the domesticated ones, not the wild ones, but again, it doesn't mean animals, but it means where they are grazing. Are they grazing in areas that are domesticated close to the yeshuv, or they're grazing far out? Anywhere you can buy from them four or five, tzon, midamar b'chol makom, shmamina seifa koi. Then it's clear that he is saying it on the seifa, ulukula, and it's a kula shmamina. Because he says four or five, you can buy anywhere, any place, no distinction made. But that means that his distinction is made about the two. When you can buy two, you can only buy even in the areas that are domesticated by tot, because there it's noticeable. When the Braita says you can't buy two, that's out in the Midbar, in an area where it's not going to be noticed by the Baalim for a long time. That's where you can, or you can make a claim that there was a treifa, an animal attacked them. That's out in the Midbar. So in that case, you can't buy two. But if you're in the, close to the Yishuv, there you can even buy two, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda's position is, Lekula. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Kufiyut Teh Amud Aleph.